Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
This is Sarah Bradbury for Red Film Radio, reporting from London, and I'm joined here today by Stefan James, actor in Barry Jenkins' adaptation of the James Baldwin novel, If Beale Street Could Talk.
Well, congratulations, first
Thank
of all,
so
on
much.
A really powerful, beautiful, but also, you know, there's a message in the film as well. I mean, working with Barry Jenkins, obviously, Oscar-winning Green Knight came before this film, so there's high expectations, and he seems to have gone even further in his very particular kind of visual storytelling style. So
right.
What was it like working with him, and what really attracted you to being part of this project to adapt the Baldwin novel?
I mean, you know, I'll answer the second question first. I mean, it's James Baldwin. You know, it's the first time James Baldwin's being adapted ever. And to do that with a Barry Jenkins, that marriage really excited me. So that's really why I chose to do the film. But working with Barry was a dream come true, because I had known that I wanted to work with him for a long time, been a big fan for a long time. Saw Medicine for Melancholy, obviously saw Moonlight. And I had put it out into the earth that I was going to work with Barry. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I thought that it was going to be this quickly. But it happened, and I'm so grateful that it was this. And, you know, he's one of the great filmmakers that we have working in this business today, one of the great humanists that we have working in the business today. He's able to just capture the humanity in people in a way that I haven't seen in a long time. So for me, it was just literally a dream come true.
And is he very exacting? Because it just seems like every shot almost could be a photograph. You know, is it very meticulous, his process?
Yeah. Quite meticulous. I mean, he certainly has a clear vision. But he's also not scared to, like, try things, to be spontaneous. And we learned that pretty quickly on our first day. He was just asking us to do things off script, off book. And you know, you trust a man like that who you respect. So
what really strikes me about the film is there is social commentary in there, but at its center, it's a love story.
Yeah.
And it seems like the warmth and the trust and the love between Tish and Fonny is really at the center. And on the outside, there's this kind of unforgiving world, which they want to shut out.
Yeah.
And also the relationship between her parents. So how did you sort of see the whole story in that sense?
Yeah, I saw it as a love story at its core, you know, a love story, but, you know, a black love story, which is something that we don't often get to see in cinema. You know, two young black people who are, like, more than lovers, they're more than best friends, they're, like, real soulmates. And it's such a special thing for cinema. You know, there's this idea that, you know, black love is in existence because we don't get to see it in this way. And we certainly don't get to see how much it's under attack. You know, this love is under attack, you know, from this unforgiving world and from a justice system that is supposed to protect you, but, you know, seemingly fails a particular group of people time and time again.
I mean, obviously there is, you know, kind of like this dark undercurrent that we see popping up, you know, in the midst of this love story. Is a particularly potent moment, I think,
yeah,
when your character's talking to Danny about he'd just come out of jail.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of the time it's not making it so explicit. What do you think it is trying to make us see about the sort of contradictions in the idea of the American dream and in society and this kind of unjust world that's
out
there?
I think it's about, you know, understanding the humanity of these young men who often get written off as statistics, you know, like 1 in 5 black men are going to be arrested by the time they're 40. You know, we never get to see that these people have families who love them, you know, people who they love back, maybe an unborn child that's about to come into the world. I think that, you know, being a fly on the wall in those rooms, it's so invaluable what that sort of does, to be a fly on the wall in the conversation with Fonny and Daniel, where they're able to, you know, you have two men who have been criminalized, but to have them open up and be vulnerable with each other and share their deepest, darkest fears and the things that keep them up at night, I think that it's such a powerful thing.
In that sense, do you think also something that Barry Jenkins did very well in Moonlight is exploring this idea of masculinity and black masculinity?
Sure.
And kind of overturning some of those stereotypes, perhaps, or
sure,
those other representations. Do you think that was important to you? And it's often from the point of view of Tish,
yep,
looking at Fonny's character.
Right.
So how did you sort of see that character and how he was representing masculinity?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Barry is sort of radical in that sense, where he, you know, he challenges perspectives, and you know, historically there's been a limited perspective on what black masculinity looks like, what the black male looks like, and for me, I mean, what a joy it is to see these young brothers lean on each other in the way that they have. We can't underestimate how important that is for the psyche of these young men who are watching this film and understanding that black men look like Fonny, black men look like Daniel, black men are artists, black men love, and have people who love them back. We can't underestimate the importance of that imagery.
There's a particularly beautiful moment where Fonny's working on one of his sculptures. The smoke sort of swirling around, you know. What do you think is going on in that scene? And I guess we almost feel like maybe, you know, that's how Tish sees Fonny, or how Fonny maybe sees himself. You know, like, what do you think that visual representation was trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that most of the film is how, you know, Tish sees Fonny, you know, in sort of these sequences. But really, it's just a labor of love. I think it, you know, his attention to detail and his focus, you know, that being Fonny, I think it just really shows just how much that art meant to him. And, you know, he says it in the film. He has two things. He has Tish and he has his sculptures. And those are the only things that matter to him. And really, you know, taking this piece of wood that, you know, to one person is simply a piece of wood. But, you know, to Fonny, he saw a whole different world and life in these things. And I think that's what it was about, you know, just showing his love and his connectivity to art.
Working with Kiki opposite her as an actress, you know, you do have to have these very intense, intimate moments, you know. You must have had to build up a lot of trust. Mm-hmm. You know, how was it working with her and the two of you on set?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I was so lucky to have Kiki as my scene partner. You know, we didn't have any time to rehearse before starting the film, but I think we both came to work with this idea that that, you know, this story was going to ride on, you know, the love between Tish and Fonny, and that if that didn't work, that the film didn't work. And so, you know, there was just a commitment to the material that we both had, you know, understanding that we were going to have to let some walls down, be a little bit more vulnerable with each other, you know, try things strangers wouldn't normally try with each other. And luckily enough, we had Barry, who created an environment that supported that.
You know, you have done a number of different films that seem to center around issues of racial injustice, the newest Dan Selma, race. And, you know, what do you think the role of cinema can be in kind of improving ideas around representation, also bringing awareness to certain issues? You know, and what do you think the role of this film could be in that sense?
I think art that reflects life and society is such an important thing, and art that can change society. You know, I think it's, again, you can't underestimate the power of cinema and what art can help people understand. You know, there's an education that takes place while you watch this film. You know, I've had people come up to me after this film and say, oh man, I can't believe all these horrible things were happening back then. And then you kind of have to look at them like, actually, it's still happening. You know, I know that Baldwin wrote these words 45 years ago in the 1970s, but, you know, a lot of these issues are probably even more relevant and prevalent today. And so, you know, I'm grateful to be a part of extending that education to people. The power of that is it's invaluable. It's invaluable what we can teach people through art, the discussions that we could raise, the debates that we promote through art like this.
But I guess in the end, it does feel like the message, if there is one, of the film is that somehow love can conquer all.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in the way that it does bring up some pretty troubling and dark issues, but in the end, it has an overwhelmingly positive, overriding feeling.
Yeah, I think that, you know, despite this dark time that this couple has found themselves in, you know, this world that has all the chips stacked against them and has threatened their love, you know, on a daily basis, I think that, you know, you don't miss the fact that love and hope still exists at the end of this film, despite it not being the you know, happiest, most joyous ending. There's a love and a hope that exists at the end of this film that, you know, you just can't miss.
Do you see the broader landscape is changing? I mean, the fact this Oscar win for Moonlight, obviously there was Black Panther, does feel like there's a shift going on in terms of representation in cinema, and who can tell stories, what kind of stories. Do you see that, or do you think there's still a long way to go?
No, I definitely see that. I definitely see that. We live in a world where Black Panther can exist, and Black Klansman can exist, and Green Book can exist, and Beale Street can exist, all at the same time, and have different sort of, you know, varied ways of going about, you know, talking about our experience, and filmmakers are becoming more unapologetic, and studios are giving more opportunities. But I think part of it is understanding that people actually want to see these stories, that it's profitable. Like, people are going to go to the theaters and watch these things. So why not make films about them? So in turn, while I don't think that we've reached the destination, and you hope that things don't, you know, remit and go back, I'm hopeful for the direction that we're going in.
Do you think that you're driven by, you know, going for roles that are in films that have something to say? Or do you think that's, you know, something that you've done so far, but you kind of wouldn't mind doing comic books or whatever, you know?
I mean, I think even comic books have something to say. You know, Black Panther was a big superhero movie that had a lot of deep meaning. So I think that there's always a way to have something to say.
I actually binge-watched Homecoming.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
What was it like working with Julia Roberts?
Incredible. Incredible. Truly incredible to sit across from one of the greatest actresses of all time. And, you know, I've gotten to share so many moments with her. Obviously, everything I've done in the show is predominantly with her. So to me, just having the opportunity to sit across from her and to pick up gems, to learn from one of the best to ever do it, has been invaluable. And what's more incredible about her than the actress she is really the person that she is. Mm. And we've built a bond that I really wouldn't trade for anything.
Are there any other actors or directors that you particularly admire or like really craving to work with?
Sure. P.T. Anderson, Steve McQueen, Quentin Tarantino, who else? There's a lot. David O. Russell. So I plan to knock them off one by one.
And are there any actors that you like particularly admired when you were younger, like that you like, oh my god, if I could be an actor like them or do those sorts of, play those sorts of characters?
I never felt like I wanted to be anyone in particular, but I certainly was inspired by a lot of actors, whether it be Denzel Washington, P.S. Hoffman, Sean Penn, Don Cheadle, just so many greats, Leonardo DiCaprio, guys who I never wanted to model any one of their careers, but they've certainly inspired me in a way that, you know, I believe that they're part of the reason why I'm here.
And can you give me any info on stuff you are already working on?
Well, I just finished a film called 17 Bridges with Chadwick Boseman and J.K. Simmons. It's more of a crime action thriller, much different than Beale Street or Homecoming. So it's just something I'm really, really excited about.
And it does feel like we're in a very particular political climate, and it's even more intense perhaps over in the U.S. How do you see that's contributing to the kind of way cinema's going at the moment? In some ways it can be depressing times, but in some ways it seems to be inspiring a lot of amazing cultural movements as kind of a backlash, especially with Trump in power.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know that people are adjusting their art because of what's happening in politics right now, per se, but I think that there's a lot to be said for just the state of the world and people who are making films that speak to the state of the world. Mm-hmm. Art's a very, very, very powerful thing, you know, to have art that's reflective of society and art that's reflective of life.
And I've been Sarah Bradbury reporting from London for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.